And now, my friends on TalkSport and on Talk, the true story of the greatest boxer you've probably never heard of. Because in 12 historic years, from 1911 to 1923, Jimmy Wilde had 137 fights. He won 99 of those by knockout, lost just four, and was flyweight champion of the world for seven of those years. America's Ring magazine recently called him the greatest ever in that division, flyweight. And he's the subject of a brilliant new book, a biography by Adrian Knott, who joins us now. The book's called The Mighty Atom, The Life of Boxing Legend Jimmy Wilde. And I'm slightly ashamed to say, Adrian, good morning, mate. I'd never heard of this guy before, maybe because of the age at which we're talking. I mean, it's a good almost 100 years ago now, but also because I suppose the division he's in isn't the most fashionable divisions. But this man was a phenomenon, was he not?
Morning, Paul. Yes, he was, definitely. You're right in saying that the flyweight division, it was overlooked, really, especially in the early years of the century, the last century. He was the Pelé of boxing, really. He was a genius.
Also, Ring magazine also said he was the third most powerful boxer of all time, because he was regularly knocking... He weighed under 7 stone, ringing wet, but he was regularly knocking out featherweights who would be 2 stone heavier.
Yeah, it's amazing what he did. Famously, he fought a London featherweight called Joe Conn at Stamford Bridge. It was during the war. And he had no trouble with Joe Conn at all. And Conn outweighed him by some 25 pounds. And Jimmy Wilde stopped him in the 12th round.
And what is it about his punching style that made him so almost kind of unstoppable?
Well, what it was, he was taught to punch so powerfully by Di Davis, who he worked with in the mines and who was his father-in-law. And what he did was he timed it so that the opponent was coming onto him, or he committed himself by throwing a punch. And as his opponent came forward, Jimmy went forward as well. And it gave Jimmy's punch twice the impact when it landed. And that's how he got so many knockouts throughout his career.
And also, he had a huge number of fights, because I mentioned in my little intro there, he was also very well known, in fact, feared as a boxing booth fighter. Can you tell us a bit about that? I'm old enough to just remember fairgrounds going round with a can-you-last-three-rounds-without-a-boxer events yeah. going on. But what was that like, and how important was that for the development of a boxer, would you say, Adrian?
Well, it was a breeding ground for hundreds of boxers up until around 1948, when they were outlawed. I mean, they were tough, rough places. There was no regulatory body to oversee any medical aspects of the fighter. Literally, anybody could go, take his jacket off, and if he fancied a scrap, he could get in with a professional.
So you say, I didn't realise it was banned in 48, because I clearly remember there being boxing booths at the back of the fairground I went to, on a place called Wanstead Flats over in northeast London. But maybe there were set-up fights there. Maybe there were, you know, ringers in the ring?
Yes, there would be. There were ringers in Jimmy's day, just in case business was slow and there was no takers in the crowd, then two professionals would get in the ring and they'd go through the motions, you know, they'd make it look good. But most of the time, it was people, total amateurs, men who'd had a few beers, fancied having a go, and they'd get in the ring with the professionals. But the professionals were pretty good with them, to be honest. They wouldn't take advantage. Most of the time, the man in the street, he'd fall through exhaustion.
And also, I suppose there was that reminder, I mean, they were boxing for a purse, albeit a small one by our standards, but we're talking about a time of crushing poverty. And you mentioned that Jimmy Wilde came from a mining background. The mines were relatively new employers, but it was tough, hard work, and it wasn't especially well paid at times, was it?
No, it was very poorly paid, dangerous work. It was poor times. I mean, they was living on subsistence wages, really. The only people who was getting rich were the owners of the mines. And, of course, a lot of the men, they made the money up either by fighting or playing snooker, which was another good pastime in South Wales.
Although in Jimmy's case, he then gets into the golf, does he not? And quite often he'd start the day before a fight with a big round of golf before breakfast even.
Yeah, he would, yeah. Especially when he moved up into the championship classes. He started mixing with different people. in an higher social sphere, shall we say. And he took up golf, and he really loved golf.
And then he got a bit of flack, a bit of criticism, you say, in the book, for not enlisting in the British Army in the early days of the Great War. But he does end up going into the Army, doesn't he? I think he's at Sandhurst, and he's boxing with officers and stuff. But he gets he gets a ruptured stomach while on bayonet practice. What actually, do we know what happened to him there?
Well, all I can put it down to is his lack of size. I mean, he was 5'2", 6'10". And although it seems it sounds a bit of a paradox, but although he could fight 15, 20 rounds, he struggled with holding the bayonet and army duties.
And then he also then gets the interest around that time of American promoters and boxers, and he starts to become, then he becomes effectively a globally known figure.
I mean, he won the Lonsdale belt during the war, and there was no other flyweights for him to fight after he'd won the flyweight world championship from an Italian-American called the Young Zulu Kid, who was from Brooklyn.
And, of course, you mentioned this fight against Joe Conn, which happened at Stamford Bridge. That was to raise money, I believe, for the Wounded Soldiers Fund, and there was huge interest in that because Conn was also a very well-known fighter, very well-known boxer. He was East London, I think, wasn't he, Joe Conn?
Yes, he was, yeah. He was from Bow in the East End. And Jimmy, of course, because he was a serving soldier at that time, he couldn't be paid.
No.
So they had to find a way of paying him. And Oppenheimer, who was a diamond magnate at the time, he got his head together and he gave Wilde and his wife a little packet of diamonds, which were worth £2,000 at the time.
My goodness. I mean, this one a house only cost something like £80-90, a whole house you could buy for that.
Yeah, yeah. And after the fight, they had a little banquet in Mayfair in London, and Oppenheimer took Jimmy to one side, gave him this little envelope full of diamonds, and he advised him to take them to the pawnbrokers as soon as possible and get as much for them as he could.
And then even on the train journey back from that, I think he gets into the papers, doesn't he, Jimmy Wilde? Because he steps in when there's some bloke being a bit leery on the train.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, like you say, there was a fellow on the train who he might have been drunk, or he might have just been trying to wind Jimmy up if he knew who he was. But Jimmy flattened him anyway on the platform.
After alerting him to the fact there were ladies present and clergymen, he says charming. He doesn't say like a different era.
It's funny reading them reports, the language of the day, you know.
It's reported, I'll read the report, it says, it's reported that it took 20 minutes for the ruffian to come round.
Yeah.
Listen, where did you come across this story, Adrian? Obviously, you're a boxing enthusiast. I know you've been a boxing fan and kind of, you know, collector of boxing knowledge since you were a kid. How did you come across the story of Jimmy Wilde?
Well, obviously, in the encyclopedias and things I've read about him, the boxing books and encyclopedias, and there's a lot of myths in boxing, and especially with Jimmy and his size or lack of it. I never really believed these stories. And the more I thought about it and the more I asked other historians, they were convinced they were true. And when I read all the reports of his fights and all the old newspaper cuttings when I was researching the book, I mean, obviously they were written by people who were there at the time, that all the stories are true of him.
And in fact, you've got a great foreword to the book by Colin Hart, who writes, you know, hugely well-known boxing columnist for the Sun newspaper, who said that his dad, when Colin Hart's dad was 12, he saw Jimmy headline a charity show at Stamford Bridge with the Joe Conn fight, which is an amazing circularity to this story. And Colin Hart talks about him and his different nicknames. Now, you've called the book The Mighty Atom, rather boxing legend Jimmy Wilde, published by Pitch Folks. Great read, this is a sporting book of the week. Great read. But he had another nickname, which I love, which is the ghost with the hammer in his hand. It's a fantastic... I presume because he was so difficult to hit, was he? He was like a spirit in the ring.
Yeah, he was so pale. Slight. It's a great nickname. The Americans gave him that. But it sums him up to a T, that nickname does.
And then, as with so many times in boxing, despite the huge amounts of publicity, the huge amounts of money he's earned in his career, financially, he ends up in a terrible state towards the end of the book.
Well, yeah. I mean, he retired in 1923, so he'd be 31 then. And he had a relatively good life afterwards. he wrote a column for the News of the World for nigh on 30 years. But of course, it wasn't that well paid. It was more of just to be seen.
Yeah, profile thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and it kept him in the loop. And but of course, he had dementia later on in life, and he had to stop writing. And he lived off what he'd earned, and he dwindled away.
And of course, I think towards the end of his life, very sad, he starts suffering from. It sounds like early onset Alzheimer's, and then he gets attacked kind of randomly by somebody, and people aren't even aware who he is back in, I think it was 1960, because he lived a long life, I think, didn't he?
Yeah, he was 67 when he got attacked. He'd been to a night at a local boxing club, and he handed out some trophies, and he was waiting for his train home on a dark night, and a local man who'd got an history of GBH... He attacked Jimmy, and of course this didn't help with his dementia either. I mean, he had bad concussion, and he'd suffered bad concussion a few years earlier in a nasty road accident. So it all added up, really.
When I look at the very end of the book, and it's a great read, this, folks. It's called The Mighty Atom, The Life of Boxing Legend Jimmy Wilde, written by Adrian Knott, who's our special guest this morning, published by Pitch with a foreword by Colin Hart. Tale of the tape is he's 5'2.5" tall. He weighed 6 stone 10 pounds, 5.5 foot reach, and his biceps were only 11.5 inches. I mean, we're talking about somebody who's like a twiglet with legs.
Yes, it's really hard to imagine, isn't it? I mean, I would imagine he's like a 14-year-old boy, I would imagine.
And knocking out adults, it seemed like, in the ring. An amazing fighter in a brilliantly told book by Adrian Knott, who's been our special guest this morning. The book's called The Mighty Atom, published by Pitch. It's available right now, and Adrian's been our special guest this morning on TalkSport and on Talk. It's our TalkSport Book of the Week with some great photographs in it as well. We're live till 5.